Jeremiah. I went down to the potter's house, and there was the Lord working on the wheel. Our lesson from Jeremiah today is one of my favorite images of God in the Bible. Having been a potter and worked with clay and on a potter's wheel, I totally dig this scene that Jeremiah presents for us. I have many fond memories of the pottery studio. I could tell you about all the different things you can do with clay and firing and glazing. But you know what? Why don't you come with me into the potter's house? I'd like to show you around. The potter's house is small. Its walls are lined with shelves full of projects in various stages of completion. On the far wall are jars with lids. There are bowls and plates over there. Over here, there are mugs and tiles. This shelf is a mishmash collection of pieces that are now dry enough for their first firing in the kiln. In that corner is the kiln. Glowing red-orange light from the fire within the kiln peeks through the tiny spaces between the bricks as soon-to-be treasures cook for hours and hours. As far away from as possible from the kiln is a large lidded crate that contains raw clay. It's just waiting to be given a purpose. Inside are the marks of hands that have scooped out the clay and left deep finger gouges behind, promises that the maker is not done making yet. There's a workbench in the middle of the room, and it's strewn with small tools, hand tools, charcoal sticks with sketches on brown paper of the next ideas. The bench is an average height, but the stool next to it is low. You can tell from that the maker is big. Untold years of clay dust settling out of the air bathes everything in the room in an even coat of light gray. It's like the particulates themselves bear witness to the quiet creation that happens here. The dust settles on and in everything as a reminder of what was, what is, and will become. The room has an earthy aroma, and yet it smells clean and fresh. The dust hangs in the air, and with each breath you take, it enters into you, making you part of the potter's creation. Can you see the potter's house? Look at the potter now. On one side of the room is a figure seated at the wheel, facing away from you, with back bent and head down. The figure quietly turns a new vessel. You can hear the gentle rhythmic squeak of the wheel as it turns. Softly, also, you can hear the sliding of hands over the clay as it's made taller and wider. It sounds like music. For the potter working on the wheel, all that there is in the entire world is right there in front. The whole universe, all that there is, seen and unseen, is encapsulated right here. For all the various things surrounding the potter that are in the process of becoming, nothing else matters more than what's right in front. This is the scene that we enter into with Jeremiah in the first reading. Jeremiah may have taken this image of God as a sculptor or a potter from the book of Genesis. In chapter 2, we find God molding the first humans from clay. Perhaps this image of God delighted Jeremiah so much that he expanded upon the idea. I mean, if God likes making things out of clay, surely there's a workshop involved. That makes perfect sense to me. But more than that is the action of the making and the interplay between material and maker. You know, making is one of the things that God does best. To make with clay takes a certain craft, a certain skill. It's one thing to attach a sturdy length of wood to the side of a building to hold up a wall while all the other walls get brought up next to it. Wood is good at being sturdy like that. Clay is not so compliant. If you've ever tried to make a perfectly even snake out of clay, you know what I mean. One might say that clay has a mind of its own. When we enter the potter's house, the action taking place at the wheel stands in contrast to the peacefulness of the surroundings. Something's wrong. The clay is not turning according to the potter's desire. And the potter is getting frustrated. I've been there. I get it. I've had the experience of trying to make a simple vessel, but the clay just doesn't want to cooperate. It won't center itself on the wheel right away, and the walls don't turn evenly, and there's that one part that's thicker than the rest, and it catches on your fingers, and you end up tearing it out. So you add some water and you try and stick it back together again, but then there's too much water and the walls won't hold themselves up and it falls over. Sure, you can crush it down and start over again, but then the clay is overworked. What started out as a simple idea for an elegant vessel ends up yet another ashtray for the ashtray pile. There are words used in times like this. The potter in Jeremiah's vision also uses some words in this moment. Different words. God is speaking about nations that God has been creating. Like unruly clay, they aren't turning the way that God has in mind. Where God intends goodness and growth and vitality, the clay seems to have a mind of its own. The potter is just about to the point of collapsing the whole thing in upon itself. Have you ever had that experience? You just want to do one thing, one simple thing, and nothing goes right. No matter what you do, it's like the universe is conspiring against you. How do you feel when that happens? One wonders how many objects have been hurled against the wall in times like those. Or worse, you crumple it up in a fit of your own tight ball of anxiety and frustration, and you throw it across the room into the basket, and it misses. You can't tell me that doesn't gall you just a little. So what do you do? What do you do when that one little thing still needs to be made? Well, let's look back at Jeremiah's potter's house. God complains, and justifiably so. The world of God's creation is not the place of peace and justice, balance and beauty that God envisioned at the beginning. Humanity is beset with all sorts of corruption. This place that we are called to steward as the kingdom of heaven has been neglected and abused. We human beings are our own worst enemies. So God is justifiably angered and frustrated with the clay that has a mind of its own and seems to conspire against God's desires. But here's the thing. The potter never tears the clay off of the wheel. The clay is never thrown into the rubbish bin. The potter never walks out on the work. The things that still need to be made will be made. Now, where does that leave us? If we consider our role as stewards of the potter's creation, and that as the Lord complains about our lack of care of creation, we realize that as clay with minds of our own, it is within our power to correct our errors. In many ways, humanity is working on those corrections. We can find lots of places where human beings are working to repair the damage we've caused to God's creation. Consider the news reports of the salmon run. Because we've put into place policies and procedures to ensure important fish can thrive as God created them to do, we're witnessing a restoration of God's good earth. Perhaps one day we'll soon witness the waters off of Kethet return to that milky white state that the elders tell us about during the herring spawning season. Turning our minds and hearts in this direction is helped through our participation in the season of creation. This is the time between September 1st and October 5th where we focus on prayer, education, and action on the stewardship of the environment, also known as the potter's creation. This is a worldwide event that encourages Christians of all kinds, all over the world, to participate in the important work of remembering that we have been molded by God's hands to become something deeply beautiful. And as children of the Maker, we've been given the responsibility to continue to care for the earth and all its inhabitants. St. David and St. Paul has already taken steps in the direction of being better stewards of creation. What was once a patch of underused land now boasts a multitude of fruit trees, berry bushes, pollinator flowers, and two glorious chestnut trees that provide ample shade on hot days. We've reduced our need for city water by installing rainwater containers to help keep our gardens hydrated. And soon we'll begin to discern what to do with another underutilized corner of the land that's in our care. How shall we demonstrate God's beautiful creation with our good stewardship of God's creation right here? There are lots of ways that we can bend ourselves back toward the beautiful vision that God has for our planet. We can reduce our dependence on fossil fuels, prioritize sustainable farming practices. We can shop locally to support our neighbors so that we're less reliant on shipping goods in. What else can we do? It occurs to me that humanity survived for many centuries without the need for single-use plastics. Indeed, some of our greatest accomplishments were done without the use of any plastics at all. So it is possible to reduce our consumption to nothing or practically nothing. We could use canning jars rather than plastic containers. We could buy in bulk, thereby reducing food waste as well as packaging. There are a lot of small things that we can do that significantly help restore the damage we've done to this planet. As clay with minds of our own, we can turn our tenacious ways from thwarting God's creation to working in partnership with God in this creation. Working together in partnership with the Maker is at the core of God's dream for the human-divine relationship. In my read of Jeremiah's vision of the potter's house, I see God's intention for us as we move toward a more healthy and sustainable balance in creation. The Lord says, "If that nation concerning which I have spoken turns from its evil, I will change my mind about the disaster that I intended to bring on it." We know that the leaders of nations have gathered together to find resolutions to the various global crises we all face. And it's nothing short of daunting to consider what we're supposed to do about global issues. It's tempting to be overwhelmed by it all and throw up our hands and give up. No one could blame you for feeling so frustrated. But remember the potter. The potter never gives up. We might not function at national or international levels to create sweeping policy changes, but everyone in this room has the power to make changes on a personal level. We can each make a big difference. Every little bit helps. My beloved sisters and brothers and non-binary siblings in Christ, don't give up on the potter's work. If God is unwilling to give up on us, who are we to give up on ourselves, our community, and this earth that we call home? Before we leave the potter's house, let's take one more look. This place is deeply, powerfully beautiful. It's filled with nothing but evidence of a passionate care for the creations that take shape in it. Each created thing bears witness to all the other created things, and together we glorify our Maker. Come back and visit the Potter's House regularly to remind yourself of your relationship with the Maker of all things seen and unseen. Breathe in the sweet, pure, earthy smells. Warm yourself by the kiln on a cold day. Let the dust of God's creativity cling to your skin and your clothes, to your hands and your face, so that when you go back out into the world, you carry with you that same passion for what the Creator has created and what the Maker is making. And then let that dust rub off onto someone else. That's the good news.